a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we have it. We've got trees knocked down yet again. Wind gusts almost to 70 miles an hour along the northern Wasatch Front. Bringing back memories of last September, Dave. How are things up in your neck of the woods up in Kaysville right now?
Gusty. Super gusty. I'm so mad at myself, Deb, because I heard the wind warning last night. And I thought to myself, gotta batten down the hatches. Which I did not do. And then at 3 a.m. this morning when everything was rattling around my house, I had to get up out of my nice and cozy bed and strap everything down. Strap down the gazebo, lock it all in. Yeah, 70-mile-per-hour winds in Farmington, which is right next door.
Let's check in with Grant Wayman, meteorologist. Good morning, Grant.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
How much longer will this wind last this morning?
The strongest should be done at 2. After about noon, we'll see them go down significantly, and then 2 o'clock should be done for good. But, you know, the interesting thing is I just looked at some of the observations. Hearing Andy Farnsworth talking about the winds dying down in some places, it's a little finicky. There are some places where the winds have calmed down. Although, in particular, Weber County, mouth of Weber, and just a little to the south of there, right around US 89 and Park Lane, I'm still seeing gusts at like 65, 66 miles an hour. So, yeah, the funny thing is, though, you know, with these canyon winds in this event, you know, it's so isolated. You know, it's just literally those canyon mouths, those small areas where the winds are super strong, not as strong elsewhere.
Grant Wayman, thank you so much for the update. Good luck.
You bet.
We'll see how the damage filters out across the state.
Eye on the Hill 2021, in-depth coverage on KSL News Radio.
We're expecting a live interview in just a matter of minutes with President of the Senate, Stuart Adams. It is a big day on Utah's Capitol Hill. Lawmakers set to begin a 45-day session. It's the 2021 general session of the Utah State Legislature, Dave.
Yeah, and we've got a massive show. 9:35, we're going to have Governor Spencer Cox on his priorities for the session, and we have a list of questions about the vaccine rollout. At 9:20, House Minority Leader Brian King, what are Democrats pushing for? An online registry so they can publicly view police misconduct records.
We're expecting a call any moment now from Senate President Stuart Adams. There is a long list of things to talk to him about. At the top of our list is what has been called the year of the tax cuts. 2020 year will be the year of the tax cut. There's a $1 billion surplus, which we've got to ask him how we got to a $1 billion surplus. Stuart Adams, President of the Senate, good morning.
Good to be with you this morning. Exciting day. We're excited to have the session start.
Well, we're excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I know it's a busy day on Capitol Hill, but we've got a lot of important questions to ask you. The number one question is, 2021 being the year of the tax cut, according to you, how will this happen and will it happen?
Well, you know, we've taken a different approach to managing COVID. We've got the lowest case fatality rate in the nation. It's 0.0045, and our medical providers have done such a great job at keeping the fatality rate low. But we've also not only tried to protect lives, we've protected livelihoods. And since May 1 last year, we've had restaurants, hair salons, and other businesses open. And that's made it so we've got some decent tax revenue. We've got $1 billion of one-time money and almost $500 million of ongoing money. We've funded education. We gave educators a 1.8% increase last fall. recommended reinstating the 6% increase we gave them last year. And now it's time for a tax cut. And so how we do it is that the businesses and citizens of the state of Utah have stepped up, and we've kept an economy going, and we're able to actually return some of that money.
Another group that you're looking to help out are seniors when it comes to their Social Security checks. I'm looking at my mom's Social Security check right now, and I'm not seeing where the help comes from. I'm not seeing, like, state or federal taxes being withheld. How is this going to work?
Well, we actually tax Social Security. So when you have that income, when she files her taxes, she'll have to pay the state tax on that. And it seems to be when after people have already paid their taxes on their income that perhaps their Social Security should be exempt. So we're looking at that, and we're looking at military retirement because the same principle applies there. And those that have worked so hard and on fixed incomes, we believe it's time to look out and actually try to help those seniors, especially those that are on those fixed incomes.
So the idea would be the state wouldn't look at Social Security money as income, taxable
right.
income?
So that's taxable income. So when she files her tax return, whatever money that she has received for Social Security would not be counted as income. So okay. She would not pay the 4.95% state tax on that.
So a tax cut for everyday citizens, a Social Security tax cut for people like Dave's mom. Let's talk about those teacher bonuses, President Adams. The $1,200 promised to teachers for those districts that are in-person learning right now. But the Salt Lake City School District, they haven't gotten there yet. We don't know if they're going to get there for the in-person option, at least for middle school and high schools. Is there any hope that the Salt Lake City School District teachers and the staff will get those bonuses promised by the legislature?
We surely hope they will, and teachers have had to do so much this year, and those that have helped teachers have kept their classrooms clean. Teachers have had to do double lesson plans, to have a virtual lesson plan and in-person. And when Dr. Burks and Dr. Redfield were here in early fall, they told us that they'd done research that showed that the virus was not spreading anymore with teachers teaching online versus those that are in person. So they recommended in-person learning because they found that even though the virus wasn't spreading among teachers who were online or in person, our kids weren't doing as well. And we found that in the Salt Lake City School District. And now we've given teachers priority status. We really think the Salt Lake School District should go to in-person learning.
But what is their deadline to do that so those teachers can get the bonus? Is the legislature going to put down a specific date? Put the line in the sand, and what date is that?
February 8th is the date, and my hope is they'll do it by then. And again, this isn't about a bonus. It's about the kids. When we see a 600% increase in the failure rate in all classes, we know we've got a problem. I've talked to parent after parent in school districts around the state, not only Salt Lake School District, but there are a lot of kids do okay online, but there's a many of them that don't. And we need to be concerned about the kids, and that's where we're trying to focus.
Senate President Stuart Adams, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck. We know it's going to be busy for a few weeks.
At 9:50, we're going more in-depth on the Salt Lake City School District and its plan or lack of a plan, depending on how you look at it, to get kids back into the classroom. But straight ahead, continuing our in-depth coverage on the first day of the Utah legislative session. Democrat representative, also House Minority Leader Brian King, calling in live. He's going to tell us what the Democrats' top priority is this session. It's 9:15. We're back with that in a few. We're in the midst of an action-packed hour of the David Dujanovic Show. The state's top leaders on Capitol Hill joining us to give us the inside scoop as we kick off the 2021 legislative session today, David.
We just talked to Senate President Stuart Adams. Now we're reaching across the aisle to speak with Democratic Representative Brian King. Don't go away, because next segment we'll have the Governor, Spencer Cox.
Democratic Representative Brian King joining us live on the line now. Good morning.
How are you, Debbie?
I'm doing well. In an ironic twist, the last time you joined us was during that crazy windstorm in September when you had your car crushed by a tree. And here we are And in yet another windstorm today. We talked to, Senate President Stuart Adams just a few minutes ago, and we talked about this tax cut, an income tax cut for Utahns. What's the Democratic's position? Position on this proposed tax cut?
Well, I haven't seen the details of it yet. I know that there's discussion of it, and there's a feeling that we have enough money to cut income taxes. But I'll tell you a couple of things. One is the reason that we've got extra money is because the federal government has come through in the last 12 months with a couple of significant spending bills. There was the CARES Act bill, and then there was the last bill in the last week of December that added some additional money. So Utah and every other state in the country is in a much better financial position today than they would have been without the federal government stepping up. So just credit where credit's due. Second, I think that one of the things that we're concerned about as Democrats is we want to target any tax relief that comes to people in a way that directs that relief to the people who are in the greatest need, individuals who have been hit hardest by COVID. These are generally lower socioeconomic communities. These are oftentimes communities of color. And, if the way in which the legislative leadership wants to target tax relief is to assure that those who are in greatest need are the ones who get the benefits, I think that you may find some support among Democrats. If it's just an across-the-board income tax cut, I think that's probably something that's not going to be received nearly as favorably. We need to invest in Utah, and we need to make sure that those who are in the greatest need get taken care of.
What would you say is the top priority for you guys this session?
Well, that may be it, making sure that in light of COVID and what a dramatic impact that's had on Utahns who are most vulnerable, that we address those needs. Well, for example, you've got many small businesses have been negative, bars and taverns, tourist industries. Help for those folks. I want to see help for individuals who are on the threshold or have been evicted from their apartments or their homes or their businesses. You've got small businesses who haven't been able to pay the rent. You've got individuals who haven't been able to pay the rent. So those are the individuals that I think we need to focus on and identify most clearly and ensure that the legislature were acting responsibly and effectively to get them the help that they need.
Back on the topic of people who have been evicted through COVID from their apartments, what are you looking at? Potentially some rent relief?
Yeah, I think we could do that. I know that the administration in Washington, D.C. has been talking about that also, has been talking about extending a moratorium that's been put in place or in places where a moratorium may have lapsed to put that back in place. I don't think that's a but most evictions are to have landlords in many cases. Owners of property need to have relief in order to make sure that if they're not going to have income coming in from tenants, that they're going to have some resources available to ensure that they can pay the mortgage too. So this isn't just a landlord-tenant landlord versus tenant situation. Rather, it's a situation where individuals across the board who were hit hard by COVID need to be able to get some financial relief until they get back up on their feet, until we all get back up on our feet in terms of the economy running on all cylinders again.
Representative Brian King joins us right now to discuss the priorities of the Democrats during this legislative session. What do you want to put at the top of the list when it comes to police reform?
There are a lot of things. We've had some very good bills and ideas run. Representative Romero has been running some bills that have dealt with the need for training, de-escalation in terms of police officers, public safety officers who are called on to address situations that may not necessarily involve
Representative King, we're having a hard time connecting with you. I don't know if you can go stand somewhere on Capitol Hill and hold your arm up to the sky, but we can hear you now. So continue your comment.
Sorry, I'll stand by a window here. I hope this comes
through.
So So Representative Romero's bill is actually an attempt to de-escalate, train police officers to more effectively de-escalate in situations where they are ending up being called out to things like mental health crises or substance abuse disorder issues, things that don't necessarily involve the need to protect the public so much as they need de-escalating a crisis situation. And that's going to result in people being less likely to be injured or killed when they are having those kinds of crises or breakdowns. I think that's very important. That's very helpful. We've got bills to ensure that when police officers use excessive force, that there's greater accountability. We've got bills to ensure, Senator Iwamoto has a bill to ensure that individuals who have a bad track record in terms of their disciplinary history or charges of excessive force can't just move on from one police force to another without the new police supervisors at the place that they're trying to be hired being aware of that disciplinary record and being able to make a decision in with full knowledge of the information about the candidate that is seeking the job. So there are a lot of things that I hope we can reach across and have good support from the public safety community on. I'm confident that they are common sense measures that are supported by Utahns, but we need to make sure that we've got everybody on board and that we address concerns in a way that provides good consensus in reaching agreement on those bills so that we can get them passed.
Representative Brian King, thank you so much for joining us at the top of their list. Debbie, for the Democrats, they really want to focus and make sure that all these tax cuts that are being proposed are really focused on the lower and middle income families and those that have been affected most by COVID.
Straight ahead. Don't touch that dial. Utah's new governor, Spencer Cox, dialing into the Dave and Dejanovic show right now. We're going to talk to him about what's happening on Capitol Hill today in the next 45 days and his plan. And also this, the frustrations about the COVID-19 vaccine distribution. Our live interview with Governor Spencer Cox is straight ahead. It's his first legislative session as Utah's new governor. We are in the middle of a pandemic. We are in the middle of a massive effort to distribute vaccines. It seems like a crazy first month on the job to me, Dave.
You know, whenever you start a new job, it's just awful for the first few weeks. I don't think it's any different for the governor right now. It is just very, very difficult. We're going to have about, 7-8 minutes to interview him. We're going to break it down to two sections. First, we're going to talk about the legislative session, and then second, the vaccine rollout.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Debbie and Dave. It's so great to be with you. I will say it's unlike the first 2 weeks of any job I've had before. So it's been an interesting 14 days.
Well, we're glad you found some time to join us and our listeners here this morning on the first day of the 2021 legislative session. You've already unveiled your $21.7 billion budget. And so far, even the Democrats, the interviews I've been listening to, seem to agree with a lot of your priorities. But what is your number one priority of all your priorities on your list of priorities? What's number one?
Well, the number one is the number one thing that's on everybody's mind. And it's the only thing we've been talking about now for almost a year. And that really is the COVID response and making sure we can get back to normal as soon as possible. I know we're going to talk about that in another segment, but it still is the thing that is overwhelming all things. And that's true for the legislature. It's true for our budget proposal. It really is critical. But if you put that aside, then the number one priority for me is education funding, and really divided into two areas. One, increased funding for our teachers, making sure that we can keep our teachers. We lose about half of our teachers in the first 4 years, 4 to 5 years of their careers. And then second of all is more equity in the way that we fund our schools and making sure that our kids, especially those in less affluent neighborhoods in rural Utah, in some of our multicultural communities, are not getting left behind.
How does that equity work, Governor? Because so much, lands on the cities and the local school boards. What role would the state play in creating that equity?
Well, so we've made some changes in the past, and that's part of the discussion. There's lots of different ways to do this. They're all a little bit controversial, right? Because at the state level, funding has always been equitable, but it's that local piece that certainly is not equitable. And in fact, we actually have some crazy incentives. I'll give you one quick example. In South Sampi, they tax it at the highest rate possible. Allowed to them at the local level, so that local effort is there. They're working really hard for good schools, but there's no economic development happening, right? Because and having a higher tax rate actually hurts with economic development. When in some of our more affluent neighborhoods, they have a very low tax rate, but they have such a large base that they're able to do that. So there certainly is some distribution that will have to happen and has happened in the past. We're looking at ways to do that is fair to everyone. And so that's one way we can do this, though, is by taking more state funding and giving it to at-risk students. We tend to have more at-risk students in these low-income neighborhoods and in rural Utah. That's one way to get more funding out to those schools, and that's something we proposed in our budget, $26 million for at-risk students.
But Governor, as you know, and as it covered the legislature for many years through the 90s, that idea that you're talking about equity and distribution of the tax base has been controversial ever since I was, 25 years old and covering the legislature. So this is many, many, many decades of controversy. Are you going to be able to hurdle that this time?
Well, we're certainly going to try. What has changed, I think, since the 90s, really, is an understanding, a deeper understanding of who is getting left behind and what some of the repercussions of that are. If you look at many of the issues that we're seeing in our country, I really believe that at the heart of those issues are people that have been left behind. And the results of that are tragic. It's multi-generational poverty, people that are on public assistance. It's an increase in participation in the criminal justice system. All of those things happen when you don't get a good, high-quality education starting at a young age. And so I think there's a broader recognition that this benefits everyone. By giving a little here, it will save taxpayer dollars, and it's so much better for the citizens of our state.
Looking at your budget, I know you've allocated hundreds of millions of dollars toward the pandemic response. As our listeners are calling in and being frustrated with the appointments and the sign-ups, do these local health departments, can this problem be solved with just more money, or are there other ways to attack this that we need to look at?
It's a combination of things, it's been amazing to see our local health departments pivot and really start to ramp up. And we've been working closely with them over the past couple of weeks, getting them all of the resources that they need. We knew it would be bumpy. It's been bumpy in every state. It's been bumpy in every country. But they've really come together. And if you look at the doses, especially over the past week, I mean, we did more by turning this over to our local health districts. We got more vaccines out in 1 week than we did in the first month. And that's just going to continue. We've been working for example, the Department of Technology Services, DTS for the state. They have incredible engineers to help with the website issues. Excuse me. And the scheduling issues, and those they've been smoothing those out. The real problem that we're going to run into in about a week is that we just don't have enough vaccine for the we'll be running out of vaccine in our local health departments by Wednesday or Thursday of every week. And so until we get significantly more vaccine, there's only so much that we can do. It's going to take us several weeks to get through the population that is 70 years old and over and our long-term care facilities. But as soon as that extra vaccine comes in, we will be ready for it.
A couple of different issues with this question, Governor. First of all, are we looking at getting more than those 3,300 doses a week that we were talking about just last week? And then also, I know a lot of the folks who signed up to get their first dose yesterday with Salt Lake County didn't get a second appointment assigned to them, and they left without really knowing exactly what date they can come back. So does that mean there might not be a second dose for them?
No, it doesn't mean that at all. And that's something that's really important. So, and just one clarification, it's 32,000 doses a week.
Okay.
Not 3,200.
I meant 33,000. I'm sorry. 32,000. My bad. Okay. Thank you, guys.
No, you're good. 33,000 doses a week. And we are getting those second doses, and every one of those second doses has a name attached to it. And in fact, one of the things that we're changing on our reporting is the first doses versus second doses, because we already have a lot of those second doses on hand for the people who got their vaccinations over the past week. Those are being separated by the federal government when they're sent to us. And so those doses are in hand. There won't be any problem with the scheduling. They will receive notification of their opportunity to schedule in the next couple weeks. You have to wait 21 days or 28 days, depending on the vaccine that you were given. Every one of those has a name on it. Now, what we've decided is if after a week you don't come back to get that second dose, we will release.
Did we lose you? Did we lose the governor?
I think we might have lost him, but I think the point he was...
percent of population who will be slow in coming back to get their second dose, and we don't want those to sit on shelves either. And so yeah, there are no problems there. Every one of our local health districts is already planning to be able to double the amount of doses that they're giving in 3 to 4 weeks based on that second dose, and we're making resources available for them. So no worries at all when it comes to the second dose.
A great conversation. Good luck. We want to wish you our best from here, Governor. So we'll keep tabs on this journey. And it really is a journey, Debbie, as we look at this. But that was very, very encouraging, because we are in this little tricky area where we're trying to get people their first vaccinations as we have this overlap with the second vaccination. And the governor just said that is not going to be a problem. The health departments have planned for that. They have the vaccines. So it's not going to be like these second vaccines are going to be displacing people looking for their first vaccination.
Straight ahead, we're going to jump into the discussion of the Salt Lake City School District taken to court by parents in the district. We've got a live update on the court case. Supposed to start this morning. So KSL News Radio's John Wojcik going to join us live to tell us if the lawsuit is moving forward and what parents hope happens. It's 9:46. Back with the live interview straight ahead.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.